This is the TSN MMA show with Aaron Bronstetter and Bazooka Joe Valtellini.
Don Jones has a hearing, and let's just say it probably could have gone a little bit better. Jeremy Stephens continues to buzz his way to the top of the featherweight division with strikes, some legal, some not. Doesn't matter. We'll discuss UFC 222 this weekend, and perhaps the greatest women's mixed martial artist ever, Chris Cyborg, joins the show. And also joining the show as my co-host, special co-host for this week, the Spartan, the main event trademark himself, Elias Theodorou. He joins the show while Joe is in the Netherlands for glory. And a big thank you to all of you who are listening on TSN Radio 1050 in Toronto or TSN Radio 1200 in Ottawa. And all of those listening to the podcast, tell your friends and please rate the show on iTunes. Elias, thanks for joining me.
Aaron, always a pleasure. And
just upping your mic so that the fine folks at home can hear you.
There you go. Well, thank you again for having me, and always a pleasure.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we've got a lot to get to today. Obviously, this John Jones hearing.
Yeah.
I mean, really, I could say, I don't know if it could have gone any worse, but I don't know if it could have gone any worse. He basically got the penalty that they had recommended. Now it's going to go to USADA, and based on the evidence that's presented, I think anything short of a two-year suspension will really take, make USADA take a bit of a credibility hit. Do you agree?
100%. And again, it couldn't have gotten worse, I think, and it might get only worse. Like you mentioned, they might try and make an example out of him, especially if anyone that, like myself, that is really paying attention to what USADA is and their new campaign in regards to, again, the Russian doping that they're very, very upset about what is happening on the international stage. They might throw the book at John. They might be trying to say, look, we clean house in our own area, in example of being the United States, and they might throw the book at him. Like, he might be gone for 4 years, and at that point he's 35 years old, and even at this moment he's already lost over 3 years of his competing ability because of some form of suspension.
Yeah, it's like
crazy.
It's like when Michael Jordan left to play baseball.
Exactly. But
and it's in his prime, at his peak.
But in a negative context.
Yeah.
Michael Jordan left to
honor
his father and became went to a different sport altogether. John Jones has hit a pregnant woman's car and took off. He has now had two suspended sentences in regards to failed drug tests. And, you know, a Bentley that he did a DUI, and, you know, not many people know that he actually crashed a car that he had, the UFC Bottom, into a tree.
I didn't know the UFC Bottom that Bentley until today.
Yeah, exactly. And there was actually a stripper in the background, in the back seat, who broke her arm and sued him for like 80, 90 grand for loss of wages. So, like, again, this is...
There weren't any guys into that kind of thing? The injured girl routine? No.
No, exactly. Like, it's crazy. Like,
I'm sure there were guys, but that's besides the point. But continue.
Exactly. Point being, again, the only person that can defeat John Jones is John Jones. Like, he is
and Matt Hamill.
Yeah, Matt undefeated, the real goat.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, that was also John Jones defeating himself with
illegal elbows. But no, it's a sad day because I was hoping. Like, I'm the hugest John Jones fan, and I want him to, like, show me that there's this, like, again, I want to put the tinfoil hat and say that, you know, DC's team or one of his team was, you know, spiking him and he had no idea. No, he just, again, the other rumor is that Joe Rogan is the fact that, you know, the test was a couple days before his birthday or something like that. He might have been partying and done some cocaine, allegedly, which had, a filler, which would be found from China, and
this keeps coming up, though, but had he tested positive for cocaine, that would have shown up on the test, and it would have been in competition.
No, because our testing, they don't actually test for recreational drugs.
But they do in competition, don't they?
No, but it's...
Because he was testing at the weigh-in.
Yes. No, but they didn't find it in the weigh-in.
But that's what I mean, but that's when they found the Turinabol.
It's confusing.
Yeah, that test was from the day of the podcast. So everybody keeps bringing these things up. So there was the cocaine argument that Rogan brought up, but I was thinking, well, that's in competition, so the cocaine would have been flagged. I mean, especially if the Turinabol would have come into play. Then, of course, there's the whole idea of Turinabol and how long it stays in your system for, which really doesn't make sense for him to have taken it, knowing that he was going to be tested that day, not to mention that he would have known everything that was put into his system during that time, because that's when you're cutting weight. So if you're cutting weight, everything that's going into your system is probably, like, you're probably being extra careful of what you're doing because you need to cut that weight.
Yeah, exactly.
So you know, and
you're
and
flushing your
system.
You can't
really blame like a weight cutting whatever supplement, because that would test positive as a diuretic or something along those lines. So it really is an odd situation where I actually don't think that he did anything intentionally. I have no idea how it got into his system if they did test all these supplements, but at the same time, you are still culpable for this kind of test. If you can't pinpoint where it came from and it's in your system, it's still in your system.
110%. There's a thing that we have to basically a little survey, a small clip, and essentially an accepting and assigning that you have to do every single time that you put in your whereabouts for USADA. You are responsible for what you put into yourself. You're an adult. You're competing at the highest level. And again, it kind of extrapolates in regards to even the other incidences that weren't necessarily, prohibited in regards to his actual competition. But we talked about, the DUI, the et cetera, et cetera. He has the money. This was just a IQ test in regards to, again, some people say that even the testing, even at USADA's level, is just an IQ test in regards to when you can time it, depending on the people that are around you, et cetera, and you're only as good as the help that you hire in some, if not all, capacity. And the same thing happened, again, if I had $10 million in the bank that he kind of talked about with DC or whatever, I would hire my best friend for $100,000 a year. You know what? You pick me up whenever on my beck and call. When I call you, you pick me up, whether it's, whatever alleged mistress he has on the side, right, whether it's any type of adventures. Like, you have your own best friend that you're going to give him, a six-figure job in his ability to, be a part of it, and someone that you trust. It's just the simple planning. I don't think so. And that becomes the issue when you're the king of Albuquerque, right? Like, you can go into every party and, get a free alcohol or a free drink. Every single time you go out, and
people are buying you drinks.
You can afford to buy all the drinks as well. So there's many different things. Truth be told, I've seen him, a couple times, not at his best outside, at a club here and there. It's, again, am I saying I'm an angel? Am I saying that, I don't drink? No, but I'm also someone that has left his car outside and has been towed many, many times before, because, again, one, the risk of both my career and anyone else. I just know people, I know people
like
that have
been, gun into the air.
Exactly. I know people that have been affected by making the wrong choice in regards to drinking and driving, and I've known for the longest time as an adult that it's never a good idea, especially when you have the money. It's not a money issue. It's just a planning issue. Like, I don't know how you have a best friend that doesn't drive you everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah, or like just a guy, like a concierge, a guy that just cleans up after you.
Yep. Or two birds with one stone. I personally would want someone that I trust,
too. Yeah, but I mean, that's, in terms of what's happening right now with John Jones, that's kind of neither here nor there, right? I mean, he's kind of kept his nose clean for the last 2 years in terms of...
Pun intended, maybe?
Yeah, well, that I can't guarantee. But for the last 2 years in terms of bad publicity and keeping his name out of the news outside of the cage. I mean, that angle.
Yeah.
We haven't really heard anything. So,
but he hasn't put himself in a position to do that. Like, you can't, like, again, he's already at rock bottom. How much more, unless he, did another DUI, unless he another, like, again, the extremes that he finds himself in.
He hasn't done anything along those lines.
Because he hasn't had put himself in a position, maybe? But he's been strong, yes.
That's what I mean.
In the weakest point right now.
In the court of public opinion, the reason that people don't like him is because he's failing these drug tests at this point. I mean, we know what happened with him 2 years ago and all of that. And mm-hmm. that obviously puts him in a bad spot in terms of optics. But in terms of what's happened recently, I don't know. It's a very odd circumstance, is what I'm saying. But that doesn't let him off the hook.
No, it doesn't. And we saw the first a sanctioned body that has kind of given, not necessarily, financially have thrown the book at them in regards to what they can. It's what they suggested. And now we potentially could see the timing component and the actual real punishment.
Yeah, well, the thing that I don't understand is, we've had Dana White saying, oh, it looks promising, he's going to be back. His agent, Malky, said 95% he's going to be back. Even Jeff Nowitzki, to an extent, said, we don't think that he's likely culpable for what happened, that he did anything intentionally wrong. But given the information that we have now, I'd say that there's a 0% chance we're going to see him in the octagon in 2018. I don't know how it's possible for him to be able to, based on the evidence that was presented today, which was pretty much none, I don't see how they could find a way to get him into the cage sometime this year.
yeah, I don't even understand how they came so unprepared for a such an important hearing. This is going to set the precedent and also the next step, which is the momentum of, again, it kind of looks like the commission is going to be the one that financially suspends them, or if like financially reprimands them, and then the actual governing body in regards to USADA is the one that's going to slap them with the timing. And you know, they often work with each other in the sense that
concert,
in the sense of, you know, they'll, like, for instance, USADA will honor, you know, whatever commission, you know, kind of puts in front of them, and vice versa. So it's not looking good. And I don't know if they're trying to do a long game kind of bluff where, like, you know, they brought in Dr. Nick from The Simpsons.
Yeah,
we joked about.
Guy, yeah, they brought
hello,
in the,
everybody.
The drug testing, the drug expert.
Exactly. Yeah. Dr. Nick, allegedly. But point being, yeah, it just seems that, again, you are the accumulation of those you surround yourself with. And if you surround yourself with the wrong people, the wrong thing kind of happens. And again, even if John is innocent, he has to prove it. And he has, even with all his resources potentially at hand, and the fact that both of his brothers are also, you know, huge athletes who, one, financially could help him out, two, should have some capacity of, you know, doctors, experts, et cetera, that could lend a hand. But it seems that, unfortunately, his manager, who was literally just head down the whole time and didn't talk and just listened, I guess that's all he could do.
John also said forged the signature when it came to doing, I guess, some USADA paperwork of some sort.
Yeah, again, even the
which could
the
land
words,
him in some trouble with the commission.
Yep, even in the words that he used, again, he might have been nervous, or what I think it could be is just like uninformed in regards to the process. And I don't know, just as someone I know who I am, and even I know at this point, and someone that, again, has never had an issue, knock on wood, of a tainted supplement, et cetera, I've only partnered with people that, again, isn't UFC approved, or USADA approved, like he mentioned, and that could have been a miswording of what he was trying to say.
He said it many times, though.
Exactly. I'm throwing in maybe the nerves. Like he must be nervous in some capacity, right?
There is, though, a list of it's not
prohibited list. There's a prohibited list, is what the technical term.
There's also a list, though, that USADA has, if I'm not mistaken, and you would know more than me because you're an athlete and you get these emails, I'm sure, from USADA, where they have a list of supplements that they have tested that have come back clean. Is that correct? I had heard about that before, that they had kind of a list of supplements that they had tested that were kind of, I don't know if they were USADA approved, so to speak, but they were a list of supplements that they had tested that came back clean.
They only say what's on a prohibited list.
Okay.
Right? So, like, they might do their own testing to say, you know what, there's this new diet supplement that people are taking, but we're a little, like, again, Jeff Nowinski talks about it all the time, the sniff test, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah.
If you can, like, he talks about that in regards to, you know, different UFC athletes that you can look and you're like, well, you know, there's something about that body that makes me think that that's not natural, right? The same thing in regards to, you know, what kind of, like, overnight success kind of supplements that kind of pop up out of nowhere, especially the way that the U.S. system is, in the idea it's like the Wild Wild West there. The supplement lobby was very, very good at essentially not allowing themselves to be a part of the Food and Drug Administration. They're essentially more or less, I can't remember the technical term, but they're just not a part of the food and drug list. It's more like naturopathic and et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
So it's more of like it's in its own class of supplement. It doesn't fall in
right.
that. But again, the other issue is that with the U.S., they have something called what's called a proprietary blend, which essentially means up to 30% could be anything.
Yeah.
Well, as a professional athlete, I can't afford
roll the dice
on that. 30% of mystery stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Well, again, another Simpsons.
None of it's really regulated by the FDA, if I'm not
none
mistaken.
Of it. That's what I'm.
Yeah,
that's what I'm explaining.
Even in Canada, on the Food and Drug Administration.
No, it's actually a lot different. There's a
is
lot
okay?
more standards. So you can't do any of the proprietary blend. You have to label what it is on the bottle. We are much better in regards to informed.
But is it actually regulated, though? Like, do they make sure? Okay.
Yep. And also,
so if I buy Greens Plus, for example, Weber Naturals from the store, everything that's in that is going to match the is going to be exactly what
I'm almost certain it should. And more importantly, as an athlete, where it really matters, I only have, again, the supplement company that I work with, they have a third party, and I think that's what he might have been talking about too. But for instance, they have a NSF stamp of approval, which basically means safe for sport. So they, any supplement company that's worth its grain of salt or whatever will have a third party test it. But again, they don't have any control over that. And that's your, again...
And the other thing that John said, though, is that they tested all of the supplements that he used and they all came back negative. So that's the part of it that is really baffling, because it, had they found one of the substance, one of the supplements he was taking did have something in it, then it makes it a little bit easier and they could be a little bit more lenient, but they couldn't even find that.
No.
So that's the part that's really interesting to me.
Yeah, but it does fall into the sphere of essentially the sphere of... you know, it potentially not even being on his radar, right? Like, again, I'm sure John would try and clear his name in a heartbeat. But again, it depends on the biggest issue is you are responsible for what you put in your mouth. Mm-hmm. And it's as unfortunate that potentially even what he mentioned at one point where he has to like he had to essentially, you know, possibly confront the people around him, whether they doped him without him knowing or they, you know, sabotaged him.
Yeah. But again, at that point in time, you're watching every single thing you're putting into your system because you're cutting weight. You're probably not putting much into your system, I'd imagine, because I don't believe that oral turinabol, I think a lot of the reasons why people used oral turinabol was because it was in and out of your system in 48 hours. I might be wrong about that. I'm not a doping expert.
It's in addition to the fact that it's not widely used.
Yeah.
So
it's easily detectable.
Yeah. So it's easy detectable. So they haven't really used it since the 1970s.
Yeah, it's a German.
East German or whatever like that product. And up until recently, they didn't test it because they're like, well, no one's going to use this. It's actually really bad for you, right? And one has to look at the sprinters of the East German team from the 70s. They've all had like many, many health problems in regards to cancers, you know, what's it called, biological stuff, especially the female sprinters, et cetera, et cetera. But the thing that came into play, obviously, is microdosing. So you don't give yourself the whole thing. You give it just a little bit of it, and you know, you regulate the actual the test except that you guys really do, and that's also the reason why USADA will up to 5 a.m. in the morning they will show up your door and knock and demand a sample. Because
do you have any funny stories about that, about them showing up?
One in New York. So it was actually right when Nick Diaz got in trouble with the last, USADA running in regards to cannabis. And I was actually wearing I went to sleep wearing a Free Nick Diaz t-shirt. And I was getting ready for my Thiago Santos fight in New York with the Ray Longo team and Matt Sarah and Ray Longo team. And I got some Airbnb in New York. And there was I was on top of the apartment that I was staying at. It was on top of a hair salon, naturally.
Two birds with one stone.
Just two birds. There was a store entrance that was kind of locked because she locked it on the way out. The owner locked it on the way out, but that was the main entrance to get in. So the guy actually took the fire exit up and around. And walked up the fire exit
right
and
into into your apartment.
Essentially, right into the doorway. Like, obviously, there's a door.
Yeah.
But all of a sudden, boom, 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 boom. At 5 o'clock in the morning, open up. And he was the most giant man I've seen, in such a small.
You should have tested his urine, is what you're saying.
Exactly. He was he was easily close to 6'8",
really?
6'9", ginormous, beast of a man. And he's like, just giant, and I'm frozen, right? Because I didn't know if it was a cop. I didn't know if it was a burglar. Did I park in someone's spot? Because, again, I have an Airbnb. Did I piss off the neighbor? And then he goes, you saw it. I'm like, oh, thank God. You know what I mean? It's 5 o'clock in the morning. I thought I was going to have to fight for my life. But no, I did the urine test and the blood test wearing a Free Nick Diaz t-shirt.
Yeah.
And I passed.
That's a good story. I like that. Yeah, so I don't know. This is an interesting time for this sport because – honestly, a lot of people think that, USADA has made a negative impact on the sport. I personally think that it has not. I think that USADA is a good part of keeping the sport clean and also keeping the fighters safe, But I also do think that there are a lot of it is very stringent. There are a lot of things about it that make it, you know, very difficult for fighters to live a normal life without having to worry about, you know, when USADA is going to show up and at weird times waking you up, things of that nature.
I honestly, I'm for it in every single capacity. One is someone that has to step in there against someone and you want them to be doing the same, you know, regiment, the same, you know, hurdles, but to clean the sport. I want a safe sport, and it's already dangerous enough what I do. It's someone that, you know, puts his body and mind on the line every single time. It's not necessarily as negative in that capacity, but, you know, there is the possibility of truly getting hurt in my sport. Dana White even once said, this isn't baseball. It's not hitting a stick and looking really like, look, do you want the real answers?
Instead of
hitting
a ball with a baseball bat, you're hitting a head with a baseball bat.
Exactly. That could be a shin or a fist or anything in between, right? So, you know, obviously some cheaters are getting caught, which I'm okay with.
I saw some fighters just got a 2-year suspension because they were trying to plead the case that they had tainted supplements and the paperwork didn't check out. And one guy, Francisco Rivera, got 4 years
because
he lied outright and was forging things. Yeah, 4 years.
Yeah.
So we'll never see him in the octagon again, pretty much.
Yeah, pretty much, especially at his weight class and his age.
He did give us that last gem with John Lineker, which, you know, we're thankful for to the MMA gods for. But
yeah, exactly.
Unfortunately, for Francisco Rivera, is going to be out for a prolonged period of time.
Yeah. But again, those are part of the growing pains. This is one of the fastest growing sports globally that, you know, has gone from, you know, illegal in all places but Alabama to everywhere on Earth, essentially. And they're just growing. And now with the new purchase of the WME, there's an opportunity that, you know, that I see as someone that, you know, is trying to be a fighter and much more. There's opportunity to, you know, attach myself to, for instance, the Toronto Fashion Show, the many different fields, the tentacles, as they call it, under WME. In regards to the, the people saying that it's had a negative effect, I would disagree. Those are just people that have been, you know, breaking the rules.
We want to see John Jones fight.
It's true, but again,
so that's why a lot of people think it's negative. Is, you know, if it was the Wild West, we'd get to see a lot more fun fights from the fans' perspective. I think that's why a lot of fans say that.
No, that's exactly.
And they go back to the Pride days and when the sport was really at its.
We will not test for steroids.
Yeah, exactly. So a lot of people want to see that kind of mentality come back. And a lot of people watch Ryzen in Japan as a result. Is it Ryzen or Ryzen? I never know. People pronounce it both ways. But it's fairly interesting. You mentioned Thiago Santos. This guy's running through people. You're actually getting complimented all the time by people that are saying you actually went 3 rounds with this guy.
It's exactly
so you
right.
must actually like seeing this guy mop the floor with people. And Sam Alvey, too, this past weekend. You beat him, and he moves up to 205 and beats this guy that's a 3-1 favorite almost over him as this crazy karate guy, and Alvey knocks him out.
Yeah,
knocked him out twice, pretty much.
And walking backwards, too, if I remember correctly. It was the right hand. But
Alvey's done to a couple people.
Mm-hmm, exactly. Well, it's just the case that obviously, MMA math doesn't always add up, but I've shown that I do have some fight IQ to, you know, whether it's winning or losing, not, you know, living to fight another day. And that's what I proved with Thiago Santos. You know, arguably, I won the first. It was a nil-nil in the kind of even in the second, and he pulled away in the third. I just disagree in the capacity, especially on the old rules, that it wasn't a 10-8 in the last, because especially if you look at it, it's just my hair that's kind of going all over the place, and he's not really necessarily connecting right on my head. But he definitely did tee off. It's just I was continually pushing in regards to at least the pace forward, trying to implement
my action fighters like him aren't really used to.
Yeah.
And Joe Valtellini, my co-host usually on the show, was very... He loves talking about that, about how a lot of people that are great strikers aren't used to guys pushing forward.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, again, it was a learning lesson. It was my first loss, and I got to understand that especially as someone that, you know, his whole identity was undefeated, that, you know, even in failure, there's opportunity to grow and learn from it, and that the sun will rise the next day, you know what I mean? I use that as an opportunity to understand that in my sport, you get half your paycheck if you lose, and also the importance of building something beyond, and that's where I kind of find myself today.
Do you pick opponents? Like, are you pretty careful about who they throw at you, or when you get offered a fight, are you usually just quick to take it?
I've pretty much taken everyone that they've given me, if not everyone. I think there's only been once or twice where, like, well, we have two people, you know what I mean, kind of an opportunity, and I was happy for that. But, you know, I've taken every single test. A lot of this has to do with not only, who makes sense, but who's available, too.
Who are some guys that they've offered you, where they've offered you two names that you didn't end up fighting? Are you allowed to say that? You're probably allowed to say that.
I can't remember which one it was. I think it was with the Bruno Santos fight. There was Bruno Santos. I can't remember. It was Bruno Santos or Roger Navarez.
Yeah,
it was one of those two. They're like, well, we have these three people, and this is kind of, we want you on this card. So these are kind of the direction. And, let's do this. And then, Sam Alvey wasn't a choice. Thiago Santos wasn't a choice. Cesar Ferreira wasn't a choice. Brad Tavares wasn't. And again, I'm willing to fight anyone. Obviously, I want to fight. I want to get paid top five people, top five money before I start fighting top five people. But for the most part, I'm not. I'm not averse to fighting anyone. I got into mixed martial arts for the love of the fighter's journey, but also to compete and be the best. And I'm slowly but surely, in less than 10 years, now at the doorstep of the top 15 in the world in a sport that I, again, have only been doing for about 9 years.
So circling back to Jones, I'm not really sure about this, but do you have any idea when this USADA hearing would be, if the commission one's done?
I assume they're communicating in some set. I think people aren't really touching on this. The big kind of story that people aren't touching on is the fact that USADA is in this very interesting place with where it finds itself with Russia, in regards to the IOC and all the other, anti-doping agencies, et cetera, et cetera. They are livid at the Russians that have been able to kind of get into the Olympics that just happened, and a lot of the tomfoolery that they've been able to.
I'm guessing you've seen Icarus.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So all of that, they're very upset, and USADA is actually putting out a whole campaign. I can't remember what the campaigns is, but it's essentially my time, my sport kind of thing, where it's like, again, the Russian government is allegedly involved in this huge conspiracy to dope all their agents, all their athletes, rather. And even to the extent that the curler
got busted.
It got busted.
That's one sport you do not need any sort of performance enhancers for. You've seen some of these guys? Yeah.
No. The curler got busted. Yeah. But
that wasn't Russia, though. That was Olympic athletes of Russia, just to be clear.
But it's still a Russian athlete.
No, I'm just joking. It is a Russian athlete.
I see that.
So did you watch this past weekend's card?
Yes, sir.
Jeremy Stephens, Josh Emmett. All I'm seeing online is people saying the knee was down. It's like watching a Zapruder film.
Yeah, exactly.
The knee was down. And,
down into the left.
Left. He was hitting it in the back of the head. Does it matter? If the referee doesn't say anything about it, does it ultimately matter whether they were legal or illegal strikes? And then I also saw some people saying that Stephens, put a little bit too much punishment on Emmett, when he had him down. That's the referee is culpable for all of this. Do you agree?
110%. And that's where the Steve Mazzagatti, controversy. Yamasaki. Right? Yeah, there.
Mazzagatti's the whole other story.
Yes,
but yes.
Yes. I get hit in the head.
Yamasaki, Mazzagatti. There's trouble on both of those sides.
Yes, yes, yes. But obviously, that was where that whole beef came in, online conversation in regards to allowing too much, punishment on the fighter's end. And again, where he even came in and said, I allowed allowed her to be a true warrior.
Yeah.
Exactly. I allowed her to be a true warrior. That's not your job. Your job is to make her.
You're not her marketing agent.
Exactly.
Get in there, buddy.
Exactly.
No, she doesn't need you to be her advocate to prove how tough she
is. Tough you are. Exactly. Yeah. No, your job is literally to see the variables that are flying, kicking, punching, and everything in between.
Yeah, I mean, his job is to get in there so that she doesn't take more shots to the head, because she's not going to tap out.
No.
That's why it's his job.
Didn't, and she also blew both of her knees and sustained ungodly amounts of blows that she did not have to.
Yeah. Well, the crazy thing about Yamazaki is his brother's even a worse official than he is. Like Fernando Yamazaki's, surprisingly, an even worse official. I haven't seen him around in a while. And then Eduardo Hurdy was one of the guys.
Yes.
And then in Florida this past week, there was another guy who was, like, I think, refereeing that it was the Latifi and St. Preux fight. He didn't stop the fight until St. Preux was face first on the canvas. Out cold. Then he steps in. Yeah, but you're right, ref. The fight is over
You've seen what everyone else
is
seeing,
unconscious.
Yeah.
He is face first on the mat. His opponent has dropped him on the mat because he does not want to kill the man and walked away, and now you're stopping the fight.
It's about a good time.
So, and people are upset about Mergliotta trying to make a game-time decision. This guy gets let off the hook as a result. Completely let. Nobody's talking about that guy.
No.
Because there's no controversy. The guy, you know, St. Preux was out. He lost.
Yeah, exactly. Literally
that
out.
Referee
dropped.
That referee was even worse than Mergliotta. I could see how Mergliotta missed that, you know, whether there was the knee to the head there or whether there were blows to the back of the head.
I don't think it's
happening in real time. Like, we can look at tape in super slow motion and be like, the point of contact on
exactly.
the way back.
Exactly. It was his ear
it
more.
Hit him.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, listen, buddy, you're not in there as a ref trying to make this call. Don't put this on the fighter first off, because the fighter,
the
fighter's just fighting, and he's going at, he's not thinking about, what am I doing here? Oh, I don't want to hit him in the back of the head. It's like, I'm sure that is happening a little bit, but his first instinct is, I need to win this fight. I'm going to get paid. I'm going to move up in the rankings. This is going to be a great night for me. His thought process isn't like, you know, especially if a ref's not saying, watch the back of the head, or like,
exactly.
He's
There's
a
no
downed
warning.
Opponent. He's
the
not,
ref
that's
intrude
probably
his
not on Jeremy Stephens' mind at all.
Yep.
That's on the ref. I say that all the time. Like, I said that with the Holly Holm and Jermaine Durandamy fight. They're like, she's hitting her after the bell. It's like, it's not.
Didn't
so
get
what?
Called.
She can
Didn't
hit
get
her
called.
For 5 seconds after the bell if the ref's not getting in there.
Yep.
It's on the ref.
Yep.
So congratulations to Jeremy Stephens on a great victory.
Great
That's
victory.
That's really all we
moves
should be
himself
saying.
Up in the, moves himself up in the rankings.
You know, he didn't get disqualified.
No.
He won.
No, he
And
won.
If it gets appealed, I don't think that there's going to be. I don't, and he does plan on appealing it. I don't think that gets overturned at all.
I don't think
that's
so
not
going
to be a no contest. It's way too subjective.
Exactly. Back into the left.
Yeah. I mean, I do think that it was an illegal strike. The first thing I wrote on Twitter after he won was Jeremy Stephens just beat Josh Emmett with what looked to be an illegal strike to a downed opponent. But again, I'm not in there. Like, I saw it as it was happening from a different vantage point than the referee. The referee's looking out for fighter safety for sure, but he might not be looking for that particular thing, right? He might be looking to stop the fight in his head. So. And I actually don't think Mergliotta deserves a ton of blame either. Like, I think that in the moment, it's very difficult to see these things. It's not
100%.
Easy to be a referee. And you don't, like, these refs don't have GoPros on their head where you can see what their vantage point is.
No, no. Again, we talked about this. This isn't pride. This isn't risen or rising.
Yeah. Probably an illegal knee.
Yep.
Moot point.
Exactly.
Complete moot point. I was very impressed with Jessica Andrade. I'm actually hoping, I wouldn't say hoping because I don't really care who wins these fights, but it would be nice to see her face Rose Namajunas for the title if Rose is able to beat Joanna.
Yep.
I'm just hoping to see that fight. And I mean, if Joanna ends up beating Rose, maybe you end up seeing that fight anyways. You end up seeing Rose versus Andrade, but Andrade has looked fantastic in her last two fights.
No, she is. She's, again, not called the pit bull, she is a pit bull. Like, you can tell that she was put on this earth to be ferocious for 15 minutes or more. Or less, she did it again last night, Saturday.
And I don't want to implicate anybody here, but Henan Burrell 1-4 in the USADA era. Not pointing any fingers, but it seems like he's just a shell of his former self.
Yeah.
He was a killer. He was a killer.
Pound for pound, and won
32 fights in a row?
31. I think it was 31. Yeah. He lost his first fight and then just never lost again.
Yeah. And now he's on, like, a consistent losing basis.
Yeah. And again, shell of a person. You know,
he's
part of
30.
It's crazy. But again, all things are not created equal in his, you know, wear and tear and miles as an athlete could be coming into play too. And we don't know what his motivation is. What if he just doesn't want to be there anymore, right? But this is his only avenue.
I mean, he moved to Florida, though, to change camps and try something different. And Pedernera said it was a good move. You should try to go to different places, right? So it seemed like he wanted to reinvent himself. I mean, a lot of people that go to ATT end up turning their careers around.
Just very true. It's a great camp.
Yeah. Unfortunate. And Marion Renault with a good win also. I was very impressed with her. Sarah McMahon just makes she has the athletic makeup and the wrestling background that should let her beat anybody, but she's so absent-minded, it seems, in certain regards to her fights.
Yeah.
And I said after the first round, I said, good on McMahon for taking Renault into side control. Renault's really dangerous off her back out of the guard, and then cut two, round two. Yeah. Were you doing the UFC account that night, or was it the week before?
It was the week before, right? With actual Angela Hill. Yeah, with Angela Hill. Yep, she won.
I wonder how many people were sending, get off Twitter, you should be training for your fight.
Yeah, exactly.
You must hear that all the time.
I get it. Yeah, that's 24 hours in the day.
Yeah, exactly. You should be training all 24 of those
hours.
Sleep for the week.
Exactly.
You'll never become champion if you sleep.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Or eat anything.
Yeah, or eat, yeah. All right. Well, that was a fun card. I enjoyed it very much. Angela looked great. Marina Moroz seems to whiff on like 80% of her strikes. It's unbelievable.
I know.
I think I can kind of see what she's doing. Like, output does sway judges. And in the strawweight division, where there's almost certainly going to be a decision in, you know, 80% of the fights, you may as well look busy, but
and
I don't know.
Well, there's also the diaphragm component, because, like, when you're trying to exhale, you're tense on the actual moment of impact. So there is a method to her madness. And I do it sometimes during training.
But well, you're the output guy also.
Yeah.
In the cage.
Yeah.
But you seem to connect a little bit more, yeah. You know, a little bit more often.
Yeah.
In the last fight, people criticized you where you had, was it the last fight? Who was your last fight?
Dan Kelly.
Yeah, Dan Kelly. People were criticizing your output because they said you weren't hitting much, but you were connecting on a lot of those shots.
Yeah, no, definitely. You know what it is? Again, people have their own opinions, and, you know, I have my opinion, and somewhere in the middle is obviously where, you know, the truth usually lies. And again, is there something I could have done better? Yeah, I could have finished Dan Kelly.
Every fight, yeah.
Exactly. But, you know, as someone that has no real former training in this other than, you know, jumping into it after my first year in university, I am still able to compete with top competitors.
That's crazy to me. How little experience you have, like, from, like, your early years.
Well, yeah.
Many people grew up learning taekwondo, whatever, wrestling, any of those things.
Judo Dan has been doing judo longer than I've been on this earth.
Yeah, longer than you've been on this earth. He was in the Olympics before you started training.
Yeah, 100%. He personifies of the, you know, the competition. Even Thiago Santos, someone who was like a four-time Brazilian kickboxing champion or something like that. Exactly, Muay Thai champion. Someone that's been doing it since he was, like, again, 10 years old. And I was able to outstrike him in the first round, too. Yeah. You know,
you started at 19. How old are you now, 29?
I'm 29, yeah.
So you've been doing this for 10. You've been doing this for 10 years. When I say doing this, I don't mean fighting professionally. I mean, you started 10 years ago.
Nine, if we're going to be.
Nine years ago. And you've been in the UFC for, what, 4 years now?
Yep.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah, yeah. How many people just pick up a bat and like, oh, yeah, you know, Major League, let's do that.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. I'm going to start throwing a football. I'm 19 years old. Maybe I could be a quarterback one day.
Maybe.
It does not happen.
You could be anything,
son. I know the sport's in its infancy, but the UFC, when you started training, the UFC was, you said what, it was 01? You started training?
2010.
Oh, sorry, 10. Yeah. So not 2001, 2010. Yeah, that's... So 2010, Chuck Liddell was like already champion at
exactly.
that point in time.
Exactly.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
That was the first class you went to.
Yeah. Yeah, I did karate maybe for like a week when I was five, and I was
I
don't want any
trial class. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. My dad just took it to me, and I barely paid attention.
Unbelievable. You should talk about that more often. Bring that up in every interview.
Exactly.
You started 9 years ago, and you've had what, 5 wins in the UFC now? 4 wins?
Six and two.
6 wins at the UFC.
And my only 2 losses are, you know,
unbelievable.
Decisions, which essentially you leave it in the hands of the judges. And one of them may
and
have been...
And one of them was close.
Yeah.
Like one of them was like, could have gone either way.
Yep.
Unbelievable. You should be very
progress.
Proud. You gotta say that in every interview, I'm telling you. Bring that up.
Well,
pat yourself on the back.
Well, thank you. But no, that's actually something I brought up recently in my open mic debut. I talk about my first actual feeling of defeat. I got in a bunch of high school fights when I was younger, and thought I was the king of the suburbs, growing up in the mean streets of Mississauga. And my first actual loss was after my first year of university. Picked a fight with someone I shouldn't have, and lost, but. More importantly, it was filmed and put on YouTube. And this is when YouTube was just coming out.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was like the worst employee at Foot Locker and telling my friends of what I did over the weekend, et cetera, et cetera. And one of my coworkers came up and said, Elias, are you okay? And I say, what do you mean? And he goes, well, I saw the video. And I'm like, what video? He goes, well, check it out on YouTube. And I go, what is YouTube? And, you know, lo and behold.
Did I have an iPhone in 2010?
Exactly. No,
I don't even
exactly.
remember.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, again, we all had our Razor, if anything.
Yeah.
But,
I had a BlackBerry, I think.
Yeah.
But fair nevertheless.
Enough. Point being. you know, I along with 200,000 other people saw my first loss. And especially if you extrapolate that when, you know, I was undefeated in, you know, like whatever high school career I had, realized that, you know, I was mortified, et cetera, et cetera. And in this like really vulnerable time, I went to my father and I was like, hey, you know, this happened. I don't know what to do. And he goes, well, you love that UFC stuff. Why don't you go to, you know, a martial arts class and make sure it never happens again? And at first I was like, that's genius. Eureka. I'm going to go learn a couple things, find this guy and beat him up. But obviously I didn't. I found enlightenment and the ability to kind of tie in what I was already doing in university, enlightening the mind, and soon the body followed, and I realized they're intertwined.
Yeah. Well, kudos. Well, also, kudos to the guy who shot that, because, I mean, I don't know what kind of technology he had to get that on YouTube back then.
I know.
Pretty good.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, more kudos to you for getting into the UFC in 9 years. I mean, he can take second place in this particular
exactly.
Race. So we've got UFC 222 this weekend, and I bring this up all the time, and I don't know if you agree with me. I think that a fight like Edgar and Ortega should headline and be five rounds and have Cyborg versus Kunitskaya as the co-main event. And that's not to take anything away from Cyborg. I think she's one of the most marketable, and she's going to be on the show later on, so I don't want to say too many bad things. But I think that she is one of the most marketable athletes in the UFC. But I think the UFC should put the fight that I think more people want to see as the headliner. And the example I always bring up is the UFC 215 in Edmonton. Originally, it was supposed to be Mighty Mouse and Ray Borg, Shevchenko, Nunes, and Francis Ngannou versus Junior Dos Santos. And I was saying they should have put Dos Santos and Ngannou as the headliner. That's a fight that I think people would want to see more. You get five rounds, and then you've got title fights as co-main events. But the UFC seems insistent on always having a title fight at the top, and I don't know if that's really the right way to go about things.
Yeah, no, especially in regards to this era of sport entertainment, right? You and I have actually talked about this before, but I'm in complete agreement, especially in a certain situation. And Bellator did the exact same thing not too long ago with Rory McDonald and Lima, where they switched with the three-rounder. Well, no, that wasn't a title. That was a title. Lima versus...
Yeah, that was a title fight.
Lima
versus... Fight.
What's his name?
Rory.
Rory, there you go.
your training
partner. Yes, exactly. Yes. He and I both get hit in the head for a living. Yes. But point being... they switched it, and I think it made sense because bringing back to what you brought up last time, you know, when people flip the channel and they see, you know, the names, even Chris Cyborg, they're more MMA fans, more UFC fans are going to know Frankie Edgar.
So maybe, well, yeah, or maybe this is a bad example. Maybe Cyborg should be headlining.
Yeah.
Because people do want to tune in to see Cyborg. I mean, I shouldn't take that away from her. I don't know if a lot of people do want to see, or like, especially from people of yesteryear, they'll know who Edgar is, but not Ortega, and I'm not sure if they would buy that pay-per-view. But I mean, you know, there's always the hype around Cyborg and how she wins fights the way she does. I don't understand this particular matchup, but that's neither here nor there.
I think there's a certain obligation of, you know, scheduling that they have, and the thing is, I think this would be a perfect fight for a Fox card. That's
with
the
Cyborg,
thing.
Kunitskaya, or Ortega and Edgar?
Maybe, well, obviously...
Ortega, Edgar, I think, would be great for Fox.
Yeah, exactly.
Because if they do want to have titles at the you know...
Pay-per-view
pay-per-views,
component.
Then that makes sense. Right now, a lot of the champions seem to be just tied up. Like, it seems like there's just not a whole wealth. And I guess Ariel Helwani from MMA Fighting has kind of discussed this. And if you're listening to the show, you probably know who Ariel Helwani is. I probably don't need to put his credentials in front of him. But he was talking a lot about how they were trying to get every champion to be on this card, and nobody was available, so... Right now, there's just not a dearth of champions lining up to fight.
So more belts, more interim belts,
yeah.
I guess.
165 division.
Exactly.
Which is what apparently Conor McGregor wanted to do. He wanted to fight Edgar at 165 in a new weight class for a title. That's what apparently he volunteered for this card. I would think that he did. I just don't think, like, I know Ali, Edgar's manager, was saying that it's BS, but I don't think the UFC would have told him about that, because I would imagine Frankie Edgar would have been pissed off if he found out that Conor wanted to step in, and they were like, no, we don't have time to market this. It's like, well, Conor kind of doesn't need marketing. But
100%. Yeah. You're 100%. He doesn't need time for marketing.
Yeah.
Because he is, like, again, he has more social reach than, and he has transcended more than the UFC has in the last little bit.
Does he have more followers than UFC does on Twitter?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
On Twitter, I think it's close.
Instagram, for
but
sure.
Instagram, it's not even close. Yeah, it's 20 close. To 7 or something like that, right? So I think he's like 23 million.
That's crazy.
But
he posts all his best stuff.
That's, exactly. That's at like a Kim Kardashian level. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I think you got to take Ali with a grain of salt every single time he put something out there.
Yeah, and
Connor too. Connor too. No, 100%.
Yeah.
But I meant in regards to, Yeah, no, I'd say take more Connor with a grain of salt, and then more on the idea with Ali, the idea that he might not have been in the know at all.
Yeah, yeah, the UFC just might not have told him. I'm excited about the debut of Mackenzie Dern.
Yep.
She's a very exciting fighter to watch. I mean, I've got a feature actually on her coming out. You'll see it. You'll be able to see it on SportsCenter this Thursday.
Nice.
So make sure you check that out. It's kind of going from comparing, I guess, the similarities between her and Ronda, mm-hmm. because of course there's her armbar, Ronda's armbar. Her dad is a multi-time gold medalist in jiu-jitsu. Her mom was a judo world champion. There's a lot of parallels between the two of them. Both very marketable, very attractive. So it'll be interesting to see if Mackenzie can answer the call and beat Ashley Yoder. I think he's a good opponent for her.
Yep.
Yoder's best tools are on the ground. And really, no disrespect to Ashley Yoder, but I actually think her last opponent in Invicta was a better, a higher caliber fighter than Ashley Yoder at this point in time, Colleen Medeiros.
I can understand, especially when you mentioned that their skill sets match on the ground, but obviously we know which one has the better skill sets and the better pedigree.
Yeah. Yeah, if that goes to the ground, I don't think Yoder's going to have that much of a shot.
No.
But I'm anxious to see how she does. I think that her striking is a work in progress.
For sure.
But it does look like it's getting better and getting stronger.
She's probably just more comfortable being in the cage, right?
Yeah.
Being in the moment and learning from it. We talked about it with myself in just the actual, amount of time that I've trained and the 9 years, which is essentially, the term, the 10,000 hours. She just needs the 10,000 hours in a cage.
Yeah, right. And that'll take some time. I mean,
yep.
But she's training with a good camp. She's at the MMA lab.
Yep.
Ben Henderson, if there's anybody who's going to teach you good technical striking and technical wrestling, he's your guy.
Yep.
So it is good that she's at a bigger camp. I mean, Ronda, one of the biggest crutches that she had from, the outside standpoint was Edmund in that camp and not leaving that camp and not going, Rafael Cordero is down the street and you're going to Edmund.
Yeah, exactly.
So, and I mean, Edmund doesn't have any fighters in the UFC right now. I guess Travis Brown. No, he didn't corner Travis in the last fight.
No, so, but I think even more importantly, he's like zero wins and seven losses in his last seven showings.
Yeah, he had one guy on the Dana White Contender Series who lost in the main event.
Oh,
but, that's the closest he's come to the UFC since I guess Ronda's departure.
There you go.
The art of head movement.
Head movement.
Yeah. Triple H could have used it this past weekend with Ronda.
Oh, hey.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey now.
So Ronda's in the wrestling world now. It's interesting to see.
It comes full circle. Obviously, I think there's some kind of trade-off between her going in there and also potential reinstatement of Brock Lesnar. I think there is
could be some sort of trade-off.
Yeah, trade-off. But it makes sense. But I still think, especially in pro wrestling, the most important thing is cutting a good promo. I still think she can't cut a good promo.
Do you want to hear what I proposed they should have done for her first spot?
What was that?
They should have had her come into the middle of the ring with a stack of papers. And the stack of papers would be tweets from WWE divas who were ripping her for getting preferential treatment. Read through all of them and say, this is real life right now. If any of you want to come out and challenge me, come on out.
I dig it.
And then have a couple jobbers come out and have her throw them around.
Yep.
That's all you have to do.
I totally dig it. And I think even before that...
I mean, she's throwing Triple H through tables.
Exactly. But even before that... I think, just in her way of handling, her last two defeats in mixed martial arts in the whole media component now in WWE, she doesn't even want to talk about
it. Ramona Shelburne asked about it. She still has
no answer.
No answer. Not interested.
If someone asked me, I would say, listen, in a game of high stakes, sometimes you're the hammer, sometimes you're the nail. And I was able to be the hammer for such a long period of time, and even to the point where I started, I started the female division in UFC and transcended my sport and still hold the record for the most defense possible. That same attitude, that same ability to win, I'm bringing out to WWE. That was a chapter in my life that I'm very proud of. And one day, I hope to revisit it. But right now, I'm going to be the best WWE competitor there is.
Well, thank you, Ronda Rousey. We appreciate your time, and it's very interesting to hear your thoughts on your career. And then I think everybody now can take a deep breath and say, you know what, you were really good for the sport.
Exactly.
But now, she just won't confront it, which I think is asinine and crazy. You can have a script like you had just had right there in your head, and that's it.
Yeah, literally the whole thing you're trying to base like your next career on is all about the narrative.
Yeah. Well, speaking of the narrative, her coach was asked who, you know, if she came back, who a good opponent would be. And he said Chris Cyborg, who will now join us on the TSN MMA show. I did ask her about that the last time I interviewed her, and she said that her coach was crazy. And I don't think that that is an understatement based on that particular answer.
Or, again, is he trying to bluff it, or is he trying to, you know, talk a big game, or more worse of an outcome or option is potentially doesn't really care. Again, if that's your cash cow, no disrespect, but more in regards to the term, then you don't care about her well-being. And obviously, she's not even able to talk about it, let alone
fight side part. Exactly. Yeah. So you have to get
baby
you
steps.
Can't jump from A to D. You got to hit B and C first. Well, Elias, thanks for joining me here, and we really appreciate your time. And Ring Boy, tell me about I've been blasting through the time. We're getting so into talking MMA, and I've got to get out of here. But I really want you to tell me about Ring Boy and the initiative. And really, the cool thing about it is that you're doing it really in the name of equality. A lot of people think that they should get rid of the ring girl job, the ring card engineer, as Front Row Bryan has called it in the past. but you think the opposite.
Yes. No, I think that in the true pursuit of equality, the answer is more, not less. And more specifically, this topic has come up huge. I found this out recently after making my Ring Boy debut for a minor league mixed martial arts event called Montreal Fight League, which I debuted as a ring boy. But it's a huge play because they've actually removed ring card holders, more specifically females, in both darts, which is very big in England, and also Formula One. So there's a big controversy. And again, my answer that is not less, it's more. It's not removing a female who has a job, who, you know, signs up for it and wants, you know, the dignity and respect to have that said job as a ring card holder, or more importantly, as a platform, as we've seen with someone like Ariane Celeste or Brittany Palmer, et cetera, who have been able to leverage that and become much more, not that there's anything wrong with just being a ring card holder, but much more than that too, and be a staple in regards to mixed martial arts in the UFC. It goes back to one, this will be one of the many This was one of the many different videos I'll be putting together for my new YouTube channel, The Main Event.
M-A-N-E.
M-A-N-E, trademark. Like my hair. Yep. Trademark included. I own it. I'm going to essentially make an MMA variety hour for many different topics, fun, acquisitive, et cetera, that I get to kind of tackle. And the first one was this Ring Boy, which I also own the trademark. once I did the video in a tasteful, classy, but fun way, I took it to Shannon Knapp, who owns Invicta, and she loved it. And she was open to the idea of me joining the next event, and it was great timing. And the fact that their next event will be November.
Will that
the
be
next
a dry one, event? It's in Utah?
Utah,
is it a dry event? Is there no alcohol sold?
That is very possible. That is very possible.
You can't have any liquid courage then before.
No. But I'll probably be well into my fight. So no need for liquid courage because I've already gotten the first one out of my way. And as I talked in the video, I kind of as a post, like a wrap up, I was more nervous about being a ring boy than I was my last fight because the psychological component.
Kelly is furious right now.
Exactly. I think he's just mad in general. But more importantly, or Brett Favre's older brother, as I like to call him.
Older, but wow. Shots fired.
I'm not wrong. But point being, I think this is a fun way to start a conversation, you know, whether people are for it or against it, most importantly, starting the conversation. And again, like I mentioned, the thing that I'm trying to promote is that the answer is more, not less, and not removing ring girls, not taking away a job from them. And also the fact is, I don't think you should be, again, the bloggers, the, people, the writers, the journalists that are kind of talking about this, you can't be more offended than the people that have the job. Like, right. That's what I don't understand. Like, if they are willing and able, and again, sexuality is a beautiful thing when done properly, with respect, et cetera, et cetera. I plan to bring...
Yeah, I think that narrative's kind of changing now, too, where a lot of people say, they're being trotted out there like show ponies and it's disrespectful and it's sexist. But I think that the kind of acceptance of the body and all of, you know, and women having kind of empowerment from doing these sort of things is a narrative that's starting to shift a little bit in society.
I think so too. And again, the more important thing is doing it respectfully. And I plan to do so. You know, people have jokingly asked, you know, are you going to walk out in a bikini? Are you going to whatever?
Mankini.
No,
yeah.
Mankini. No, I will not be walking
in a
mankini.
I know someone who won't be tuning in. This guy.
Exactly. but. No, what I'm going to be wearing is shorts and like a open robe, similar to what I'm wearing now, even though no one can see it. Mm-hmm. But athletic.
Elias is in here wearing just a robe. So you can use your imagination on the podcast.
But yeah. It'll be an open robe in the front and sleeveless, and I essentially, you know, I'll be walking out with class, dignity, and respect to the coworkers that I'll be working with as a ring boy, mm-hmm. as a ring card holder in my own right. And again, it'll be on a all female fight league, and you know I'm not going to take away, but rather add to a great night of fights. The more important thing will be the female competitors that are going to be kicking butt in their own right in their time to shine. I'm not going to try and you know make a mockery of it or make a spectacle of it. I'm just here to add.
Mm-hmm. I like the idea. I think it's good. I mean, to have just females as ring girls implies that there are no females in the audience, or the females are, you know, that's all they want to see. But having you there, I think if there's a female audience, you're going to be able to see you do that and cheer and, you know, get something out of it themselves in that capacity.
Yeah, no, 100%. And again, I'm having fun with it, and I you know, encourage everyone else to join in it. And, you know, whether you love the idea or hate it, again, at least I've got you talking about it. And, you know, at Elias Theodoro, you're more than welcome to jump in the conversation. And then, you know, tell me why you did or didn't. And I think, again, not only in regards to quality, but in regards to, you know, just the conversation and openness, et cetera, this is your opportunity to have a conversation with me.
And an Invicta alumni who will join us on the show right now, Chris Cyborg. She's the UFC featherweight champion, headlining UFC 222 against another Invicta alum. See, so you're getting a lot of plugs here. Yana Kunitskaya, who was most recently, I believe, the bantamweight champion of Invicta and is now making her way over to the UFC to headline UFC 222. Cyborg joins us right now.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time to introduce this week's guest.
I'm joined now by the undisputed UFC women's featherweight champion, Chris Cyborg, the one and only, one of the most marketable stars in the UFC today. So, Chris, how did this fight come together? You know, all the talk was about Amanda Nunes fighting you next, and now you're here headlining UFC 222 this weekend against Yana Kunitskaya.
You know, she contacted my manager, and then because I had one fight, I had the injury, and then it's no fight, and then called me asking me if I'd like to fight. And I was living in Portugal. I was doing seminars there. And then I said, you know, at the beginning, I said, maybe I cannot change anything in Portugal. You know, I would like to finish all the tour I was doing there. And then, but when they asked me, I said, I mean, you know, I need to check my weight. I need to train first and see how the feeling. And I checked my weight. My weight's okay. I did the training, and then I feel great. The common man is okay. I can fight. But then I can't say anything about in Portugal, too. They're going to continue here, and they start my camp. Short camp in Portugal, and I come back to LA and continue to work out training here too with my team. I did amazing camp for Holly fight, and then I always continue training. You know, I never stop training because when this can happen, you know, I'm ready. And then I just say yes, and they continue training, and they have 2 weeks camp training, and then now I'm a week to the fight, and they feel great, my weight great. I think it's gonna be amazing fight Saturday.
Did it surprise you when you got the call to fight at UFC 222? I know you were probably targeting a fight in the summer against Amanda Nunes. That's what the discussion had been. When this fight came up, were you surprised?
You know, I was really surprised because when I told them I was going to fight, I say I would like to fight in February after my fight because I really have a lot of things to do after end of the March. Like he did 15 up. I have a lot of things to do because I said I would like to fight July. But this fight, you know, is great because beginning of the March, I still can fight. And then it surprised me, you know, too. But, you know, I think it would be good for you know, for some issues with relationship with FFC. And I feel great. I think, you know, I take this for the team. And I think it's going to be an amazing fight for all my fans. And I think Cyber Nation really happy too. They're going to be here in Las Vegas. I think it's a missed opportunity.
So they call you and they say the name Yana Kunitskaya to you. She's, you know, the Invicta bantamweight champion. Was she on your radar at all? Was she somebody that you knew about and that you've seen fight in the past?
You know, she's fighting Invicta. And then I think before I was supposed to fight Holly, some people say, and she texted, she sent to me, yeah, Chris, you know, I'm coming for you. I don't know, 45 pounds now. And then because she's getting weight more than 10% after her fight, 135, and then she's got up 145. I think she's the example that a lot of girls going to 145 now. And she's the world champion, 135 Invicta. And then she's Russian. I think she's very good game in MMA. She's grappling. She strikes. I think it's going to be amazing fight Saturday for all the fans.
You've been pretty vocal about wanting to fight legitimate featherweight fighters. You know, Yana fought exclusively at 135 pounds over the last 2 years. Are there just a lack of true featherweights out there for you to face in the women's division?
You can repeat again, I'm sorry.
Do you think that there's just a shortage of women at 145 pounds for you to face? I know you wanted to face a featherweight in this next fight, and Yana is more of a bantamweight. She's the bantamweight champion. She's fought at 135 pounds for the last 2 years. Do you think that there just aren't that many 145-pound women out there for you to face?
You know, if you see Holly Holm, Holly Holm fight boxing 154, and then she fought me 145, then she say, you know, I feel great 145, I'm going to continue to fight 145. I think you don't have so much girls yet because this is the division is really new, and I think the division 145 is going to be the biggest division for women's MMA because a lot of girls cut a lot of weight, and now for the commission rules, you have to be close to your weight. I think 145 pounds would be great. And, you know, Yana, she's a commission told her she's a big girl. She's supposed to fight 145, and she's going to be a real 145. I think in little bit, you're going to grow this division, like the men's division. Now, men's division, the start is going to be slow, and they like to be 135 girls. I think 145 getting slow, but they're going to be big division soon.
Amanda was an opponent that was named for you, Amanda Nunes. A lot of people were talking about her coming up to 145 pounds in a champion versus champion fight. Was that discussed for this event, and is it still being discussed for a future event? Because I know Amanda is now expected to fight Raquel Pennington at UFC 224 in Rio.
You know, my thought is not as my fight started, you know, but I never take out the table fighting Amanda. But Amanda has a fight soon, too. You know, she has to defend her belt, and probably in the same night, Kelly Vieira is going to fight Katherine Gunner, and this girl is going to be the next one fight for the belt. I don't want to step into any girls who know support fighting for the belt, but you know, I'm ready for fight anybody anywhere, you know, and if you'd like to make the fight, I'm going to make the fight for the fans.
So if the public and people are still interested in that fight, that's still a fight that interests you?
You know, any fight, you know, would like to fight, and my fans would like to see. I would like to fight. You know, this is my job. And at the beginning, I said I don't like to fight Brazilian. You know, but you know, she called me out to want to fight me. Okay, now she has to fight, and she had to defend the belt. If she's the one, maybe can fight.
You've been relatively untested so far in terms of, you know, in terms of the competition that you've had. You've been able to beat pretty easily. Who do you think is the toughest challenge out there for you in MMA?
You know, I think the big challenge for me, you can show it's my last fight, you know, Holly stayed 5 rounds with me. And then it's a long time, I know, stayed a long time in the cage, and she's giving the big challenge, and she stayed 5 rounds with me, and then showed the real fire. I think my last fight is the big challenge in my career because it stayed more long.
I thought, I want to ask you about the Holly fight, because there was one thing that stood out to me. I thought that Holly did really well in the 5th round. I know that you won the 5th round, but two of the other judges had Holly winning, I think it was rounds 2 and 3, if I'm not mistaken. It might have been 1 and 2. If she would have performed a little bit better in the 5th round, she would have won on the judges' scorecards, which to me I think is crazy. Have you watched that fight back, and does that worry you going forward that judges are going to give your opponents, you know, because they're performing well against you and you've been so dominant, there's a chance that leaving it in the hands of the judges could be a problem?
You know, I watched the fight. I think she won the 1st round, but I think the rest of the other rounds, I touched more her. And then you can see the damage her face. You can see my face in the end. And I think I touched more than her. And I don't see like it clicked. I see I beat her this fight. No 5 rounds, but most of her.
Before I let you go, Cyborg, and I appreciate your time, what are your thoughts on the John Jones situation from earlier today with the California State Athletic Commission? They've revoked his license and fined him $205,000, and he still needs to go in front of USADA. What do you think about what's going on with John Jones right now?
I really out of the news. I really don't know anything about what's happened to John Jones. But, you know, I hope he can fix his problem and get back to the cage. I think all the fans are waiting for him. He's an amazing athlete and, you know, amazing fighter. And I really don't know anything, but, you know, I hope he'll be there well and, you know, he's wishing he's had to.
Well, you know what I like about you, Chris Cyborg? You want what the fans want, and I think that that's very respectable. You always say, if the fans want me to do this, that's what I'm going to do.
Yeah, thanks so much. You know, I'm trying getting better each time.
All right, well, we appreciate your time, and we look forward to seeing you against Yana Kunitskaya, UFC 222. It's this weekend, and the preliminary fights are available on TSN here in Canada at 8 p.m. Eastern. Thanks again.
Thank you.
That was Chris Cyborg headlining UFC 222 this weekend against Yana Kunitskaya, who was the bantamweight champion of Invicta. She had previously fought Tonya Evinger, another former Invicta FC bantamweight champion. But we have a little bit of a surprise today on the TSN MMA show, a late addition to the show. Speaking of Invicta, her last fight was in Invicta against Kalina Medeiros. She is going to be headlining the UFC 222 prelims on TSN. It begins at 8 p.m. Eastern. She is Mackenzie Dern, very, very well known in the jiu-jitsu world, has made her transition to mixed martial arts, and she joins us now on the TSN MMA show. I'm joined by the phenom, Mackenzie Dern, one of the greatest female jiu-jitsu practitioners of all time, and she's going to be headlining the preliminary card, which airs on TSN here in Canada at 8 p.m. Eastern. Mackenzie, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm well. You know, when UFC 222 was originally announced with the main event of Max Holloway and Frankie Edgar, there was a good shot you were going to be on the main card, but it ends up working out in our favor here at TSN because you're going to be on the preliminary card. But in terms of eyeballs, there's going to be a lot of people watching on TV for the main event of the preliminary card rather than having you on the main card. Do you like that? Are you happy that that's how it played out?
Yes, for sure. I'm definitely happy about that. My manager, actually, when we were talking about my first fight, they wanted me to fight on the weekend before. That just happened. That was like fight week type thing because it was like more you know, more views and everything. But, you know, I was in Brazil and New Year's and everything, Christmas. So I was like, no, I just want one more week. I want a little bit more time to prepare. So then they put me on the pay-per-view card. So the fact that, of course, not good that he got hurt or anything, but the fact that it ended up being like this, it works out really good. You know, I'm excited to have a lot of people witness my debut.
Absolutely, and it's going to be against Ashley Yoder, who's been in the UFC for some time. She's more of a ground fighter. Do you think that your matchup against her is pretty advantageous?
Yeah, for sure. I think that to fight a grappler is always going to be better for me, you know. Then I think it's just to see, like, who respects each other's stand-up more, you know. But I'm really confident with my ground game. Of course, when you have, like, punches, they always say, like, when you put in punches, with it, you become like a black belt becomes a brown belt, and then the more punches you get, you keep going down in the ranks, you know. But I'm really confident in my ground, and I'm confident in my stand-up too. You know, I think like it's going to be a great fight, and I'm excited.
So this is a pretty high-pressure job that you have here as a UFC up-and-comer. This is your debut, but there's been a lot of hype behind you for some time. You know, obviously people are familiar with your great jiu-jitsu resume. Do you consider this a high-pressure job? Do you feel the pressure of going into this fight with that kind of momentum behind you?
I don't feel like the pressure, you know. Like, I definitely know that there's expectations there and everything, but I feel almost like more pressure on myself to make sure I stay grounded, you know. I don't want to, like, get too excited and think like I'm, you know, Mike Tyson, Muhammad Ali, you know, and going to be ready for the, like, you know, for the title fight in, you know, two fights. You know, I just want to make sure, even if I win, you know, that I know, like, I still have so much to grow. And, I mean, I come from, like, jiu-jitsu, you know, so I've been doing a sport for my whole life, 21 years, you know. So, like, I definitely know how to stay patient, and I have great coaches. You know, they don't like sugarcoat anything. They're not like, oh no, you're good. They say, no, you're really bad at that. Don't do that again. You know, okay, let's like work on this. You know, so I definitely have like really honest people with me, and I think that's the most important. You know.
Yeah, you know, I was gonna bring that up because in jiu-jitsu, the pressure gets bigger and bigger with each match. I mean, if you're in a tournament and you start out, you get a win, and then you're expected to win the next and the next to get to that final. So you probably are pretty familiar with having that kind of pressure on your shoulders.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, my dad, he's like a jiu-jitsu legend. He's really known Magnuson Diaz in the world, you know. So even since I was like a blue belt, you know, juvenile, I've always had like kind of more eyes on me than a lot of the other blue belts and purple belts and brown belts. So growing up to the ranks, I've always been like, used to people, you know, but yeah, like you said, just like going through each match, you know, like you get closer and closer to the finals, you know, and so I think that's kind of like the same thing, but you know, we have fight after fight, you know, so I'm not in a rush like to go and if I win this one and I win like in a title fight, you know, just I want to be like as most prepared as possible. I know each fight's going to give me a different obstacle, so I'm excited.
You mentioned your dad, Megaton Diaz, multiple-time gold medalist in jiu-jitsu. Is he going to be there for your debut?
You know, my dad hasn't seen me fight yet. And he hasn't seen me fight yet. And he won't be here in Vegas for this fight, too. You know, I think it's a lot of very nerve-wracking, you know, for the father to see, like, his daughter, you know, get punched in the face, you know. But he'll be watching on TV for sure from home, comfortable. And I'll be able to call him after and everything. So right now, we still think that's the better choice.
So does he avoid watching your fights live? He wants to know, make sure that you get out okay, and then he watches them again afterwards?
No, he watches them live on the TV, but so far to come here. And I think also, too, just to see me, you know, through the whole weight cut. And, you know, it's not an easy job, you know. Like, I it's always kind of hard to make 115 for me, so... I think, like, just to be here and see me kind of suffer and to not know what's going to happen, you know, to you. You know, you have more chance to get injured in MMA than you do jiu-jitsu. So he just feels better to watch from home with his friends, with the family and everything. So we'll see how it goes. For sure, I definitely want him to come see me sooner than later. You know, I don't want, like, to one day if I go to fight for the belt, you know, and he's never to see me fight, then I'll kind of be a little superstitious, you know?
You mentioned the weight cut. You have had issues with it in the past. Your last fight against Colleen Medeiros, it looked like you were really in good spirits when you weighed in, actually, at 115 pounds. Have you figured out kind of a science to getting yourself to that kind of threshold? Are you walking around a little bit lighter?
Yeah, definitely, like, walking around a little bit lighter. But even just, like I said, you know, like, I never did any, like, amateur fights or anything like that. So, of course, like, I want to respect all my opponents and everything, but it's still such a learning process for me. So I think there's a lot of like trial and errors and seeing what was the best. You know, MMA is way different than jiu-jitsu. We like jiu-jitsu, we weigh in and you go straight to the mat. We don't have like 24 hours to rehydrate and stuff like that. So I definitely am doing a style more like jiu-jitsu, you know, but I feel better that way. You know, I know it's not so common in MMA, but you know, MMA, every athlete is like, they have their own style, their own fighting, their own style for diets. You know, some people say they do the diet way different. Other people say they like to dehydrate, I don't know how many pounds of water. So it's just a learning process. And I'm still, of course, it's hard for me, but I'm still learning and I'm feeling each fight better and better.
Well, having seen you grapple with Gabby Garcia, I can understand why cutting weight doesn't make a whole lot of a difference to you. You like to get on the scale and whatever it is, right?
Right, exactly.
So what are your personal expectations? You know, you've made the transition now to the UFC, to obviously the combat sports. Not that jiu-jitsu isn't the combat sport, but to MMA. Where do you want to be at the end of the day? You know, what are you hoping to accomplish in this space?
I mean, of course, to be like UFC champion one day, you know, I think like just what I most look for is to be able to represent like jiu-jitsu as best possible, you know. I want to like get a submission, of course, but when I walk away from the fight, you know, and I'm at home and with my friends, my dogs, like I want to just be able to look back on the fight and be like, man, okay, I'm way better than I was my last fight, you know, and I hope like each fight I'll be able to say that, you know. I don't want to, of course, even winning, you have like so many errors, you know. That's something I learned a lot from jiu-jitsu. I fought like every month, you know, sometimes twice a month, you know, so every tournament, you even winning, you have so many things you can get better, you know. But I think that's just basically my goal, like to be the best fighter possible, you know, like standing up and on the ground. But for sure, you know, like I have 3 submissions out of 5 fights, you know. I would like to be able to really like impose my jiu-jitsu, you know. Like I think people respect my jiu-jitsu so much, you know. Sometimes it's hard, you know, like it's just training like a jiu-jitsu defense, you know, take down defense and like to be very careful on the ground. So it's definitely way harder to set, you know, when they like are so protected and everything, you know. So I like, if I can be able to, even with them thinking so much about my jiu-jitsu, you know, like maybe you know, have them respect my stand-up and then get my submission, and that's I think is like one big goal for me.
When you assess your performance from fight to fight, specifically in MMA, what do you think needs the most improvement, and what do you think is the most improved, you know, aside from your jiu-jitsu, obviously?
I think for sure my most improved is my stand-up, you know, like punches. Like I'm getting, every time I'm getting more and more confident in my punches, you know. Like I always thought like, oh, 115er, 115 girls, you know, we don't really have like too much strength in our punches, you know. We don't see like too many knockouts. But like more and more, and I train with like tough girls, you know, that are in the UFC, Courtney Casey, Lauren Murphy, you know, and like they punch me so hard, you know. So I never really thought that like my punches had like power behind them. But more and more I'm fighting, and more I'm training, I'm seeing like I'm seeing combinations, you know. I'm not like so slow anymore, you know. I can like see the punches coming at me now, you know, and respond good, you know. I think that's the biggest biggest change I've seen, and I think what I would like to get better at the most is probably just like my cage work and like the takedowns, you know, like being able to transition good, you know. Sometimes I think the takedowns can get like sloppy, you know. I'm not in jiu-jitsu, we can just pull guard, you know, so like to not pull guard and really work on like wrestling, you know, it's hard for me. So I think that's like where I would like to develop the most, is like kind of my takedown game.
And finally, before we let you go, we have a feature about you on SportsCenter this Thursday. And in it, we make a comparison that I'm sure you've heard a lot, which is to Ronda Rousey. You guys were both, you know, at the highest level of your particular sport going into MMA. Her judo, your jiu-jitsu. Her mother was a judo world champion. Your father, a multiple-time gold medalist in jiu-jitsu. When you hear those kind of comparisons, are you flattered? And what do you think of them overall? Do you think that it's accurate?
It's flattering, you know. I think she's such a pioneer for women's MMA and everything she's done with women and them and the UFC and all that stuff, you know. Yeah, for me, it's like great. I inspire like to do at least how much she's done, if not more. I would like to even accomplish more than she's done and hopefully inspire more and more and stuff like that. But for me, yeah, it's compare me to her, but I just hope like people know that like we're totally different people, you know, different personalities, different different obstacles in life, different everything, different backgrounds. So even though I really like how they think of me when they think of her when they see me, you know, but I just like in my mind I know like we're different, you know, and so I hope everyone else can see that too.
What do you think is the biggest difference?
The biggest difference, I think just, you know, the personality, and I think the challenges we go, you know, I think the divisions, you know, everything that, like, my division has to offer, all the girls I fight and all the girls that she's fought, she was very, like, the beginning of the sport, and I'm kind of, like, jumping into one of the most, fullest divisions, you know, I think, so I think with time, you know, just each person's facing way more different obstacles, you know. Not that one is harder or less harder than the other, but I think that's what makes each of us the biggest difference between both of us.
All right, Mackenzie. Well, I can't thank you enough for your time. As I mentioned, the main event of the UFC 222 prelims will air on TSN beginning at 8 p.m. Eastern, headlined by Mackenzie Dernan. You can catch the feature on Mackenzie on SportsCenter this Thursday. Thank you very much for joining me.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Wow, what a jam-packed show. That was a lot of fun. Mackenzie Dern joining the show as a late addition. pleasure to have her on. And, you know, the sky's the limit for her. Again, the comparisons to Ronda Rousey are pretty palpable. And it's very exciting that she's going to be having her debut on TSN. Again, begins at 8 p.m. Eastern. Her fight should be around 9:30 p.m. Eastern if you want to check out Mackenzie Dern's debut. And as mentioned several times on the show, on SportsCenter this Thursday, a feature on Mackenzie Dern. You should definitely check that out. And as always, we appreciate it. Joe will be back next week. I want to thank Elias Theodorou for sitting in with me here, and we'll see you then.
Thanks for listening to the TSN MMA Show. For all the latest UFC news, visit tsn.ca/UFC.